Welcome once again to Upfront Soul. I'm your host, Sanguine Fromage, laying down the soulful sounds to which I know you are getting down. And I would just like to let you know you can find our Facebook page by looking for Upfront Soul. We'd love it if you liked us. You can send us messages and keep in touch with what we've got going on. What we've got going on right now is an exciting interview with Rashid Ali, so do stay tuned and enjoy. We're here with Rashid Ali, and his new album, 1968 Black Power, has been in heavy rotation here on Upfront Soul. It is my favorite release of 2016, and I'm so excited to have Rashid Ali here with us to talk about his new album. Welcome, Rashid.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be talking to you again, Susan. Yeah. This is wonderful.
That's great. Well, I'd love to hear, what was it like making 1968 Black Power? What was the process like? What was it? How did it feel?
Well, I wish I could separate 1968 Black Power from 1968 Soul Power and the future of the trilogy, 1968 Black Power. It's kind of hard to separate because it's, in fact, last time I talked to you, I had reason to go back into my, I keep a studio log, so I had reason to go back into my studio logs because I was wondering, when did this all begin? You know, when were the first seeds planted? You know, because projects, they start with little seeds and then they grow, but sometimes, you know, they don't grow overnight. Some, just like some trees are slow growers. Mm-hmm. And this project, I was amazed to find out that the first seed for this project was in 2008. So this is 2016 and the first album didn't come out till last year, so it was 7 years in the making. Wow. But not the way it sounds. It's not that I was toiling for 7 years. It's that the seed, the idea came upon me, and then I couldn't get back to it. And when I so in making last year's album, 1968 Soul Power, I basically had to collate, you know, take what's going to be the best entry point, what's, so that people can engage with this idea, you know, this dream that I had to go back in time. So I snatched some songs that I knew had to be on the first album. I snatched some things from what I thought would be Black Power, and I snatched a couple from what I thought would be Love Power. And I thought it'd be best if that everything would feel better if there were elements from all three in the first.
Mm.
If that makes sense to you.
Yeah, sure.
So, because I wasn't sure what was going to happen anyway. So anyway, after the first album came out, invariably, after you work so hard on one project, your brain, you know, the human mind fascinates me because I studied meditation, transcendental meditation, when I was 16 years old, and it's still my go-to, you know, my go-to mm-hmm. exercise. For understanding how to become blank again. So, and when we meditate, you need a mantra, right? You need to be able to focus on something like I am, I, or whatever it is. So I felt that the first album was, I was focusing on 1968 Soul Power. And then when it was over, as if some meditation, my brain kind of just spun out like, hey, can we do something else? And the something else was new songs. Mm. So I had this explosion of new material. And I said, oh, no. And my wife always looks at me like, oh, no, he's at it again. Like, you're gonna be stuck with so many tunes that, you know, how are you going to now weed them out? So there were some new things that came into the process. And but the actual recording of 1968 Black Power happened very quickly. It was a couple of months, and I was wanting to make sure that the second album came out exactly a year later. Mm-hmm. Because there was still a lot of engagement in Europe but very little engagement in the States. And I felt like, well, I'm not even, in my mind, it was like, I'm not even going to release this album in the States because they haven't even heard the first. But then I thought, well, you can't do that. So just release it. Right. You know, I try not to be contrived with what I do. So I just put it out.
Yeah. So basically you rolled right in after 1968 Soul Power. You started writing right away. You didn't really take a break. You just dove right back in.
Yes. Yes. I once saw a documentary on the great painter, Rothko, and his daughter was interviewed, and she said, my dad wakes up in the morning, he has his coffee, he grabs his paintbrush, and he sits in front of a canvas, and he paints every morning. That's me, but instead of painting, I have my coffee, and I sit at a piano. And, you know, that's the extension of who and what I am.
Yeah.
And invariably, I'm always writing. There's always something new. What I try to do is make sure that I have a serious feeling about what quality control, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would say that if you look at the first album and you think, wow, he put 18 songs on the first album, there were at least 30 songs that didn't get on that album.
Mm.
And by the time I got to 1968 Black Power, there's another 18 songs, and now there's about 50 songs that are on the side saying, meme, put me in the next one.
So, sounds like, I know you're a multi-instrumentalist, but sounds like you do most of your composing at the piano. Is that right?
I do all my composing at the piano. You know, I think it might be a little bit of a misnomer to call, I understand why people call me a multi-instrumentalist, but, I don't look at it that way. You see, I started out, my first instrument was kind of by happenstance. Just so happened to, one of my brother's friends came by the house with a flute, and I made a sound out of it, and everybody went, oh, wow, the kid makes a sound. And I'm 7 or 8 years old, and he says, let the kid have the flute for a while. You know, I don't need it right now. But I have another one. So it was kind of I backed into the flute, and then the frustration I had with the flute when I was in my first band, Natural Essence, was that I was more than just a flute player. I'm a very rhythmical person. I'm more powerful than the flute. So eventually, in very short order, I started playing saxophone, which is the natural double. You know, you go to school, you go to music school, you have to double. So I play all the reeds, including the oboe and the alto clarinet, but the saxophone is more powerful. But I always played the piano once I was in high school, because the piano is the center of all harmony and all writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always played the drums because I'm the baby brother. My two older brothers both play, and in fact my middle brother, Ray, was in my band Natural Essence. He was the percussionist in the original iteration of the band. So, I the way I see it is a little different. And singing, I always wrote songs from the time I was in high school, and I just see them all in a circular way. Though somebody looking at me might think, "Oh, what do you play now?" No, but I've always played the piano, and when in the late 70s, I gave up the saxophone as my lead instrument. And then I became a keyboard player. And, you know, I've worked professionally mostly as a keyboard player, secondarily as a percussionist. And I haven't worked as a saxophone player or reed player since my teen years. So I only play reeds. I only play flute and saxophone as a session player on my own records, which is a lot of fun. It's big fun. You know, I call up Rashid Ali's flute player and saxophone player, and I say, okay, I got some parts for you to play.
That's great. Well, I'd love to play some music for the people here from your new album. Do you have a song in mind? I have one if you don't.
I have several. I think you want to hear Just Want to Be Happy.
I think, you know, that's funny. I actually had that in mind for right now. So let's hear Just Wanna Be Happy from 1968 Black Power. We're here with Rashid Ali.
See that young girl on the corner, killing time on the track, making money on her back. I hate to tell you one simple fact, she wants the same as you. She wants the same things too. Just wanna be happy. It's a crying shame. I'll never judge, never blame. I see people trapped in a ghetto life. They see no way out, dead or alive. They want the same as you. They want the same things too.
Just wanna be happy, just like me and you. Just wanna be happy.
Just Wanna Be Happy from 1968 Black Power, the new album from Rashid Ali, who is joining us here on Upfront Soul. Thank you so much once again for being with us, and so excited to talk to you about the new album. So I'm wondering, you know, 1968 is a unique moment in time that's really distinct from 1967 and distinct from 1969. Can you talk a little bit about the significance of that year and why you chose to focus on it for this trilogy?
Well, I knew in 1968, after 1968 passed, or during 1968 when I was it was my first year in high school. I knew it was a special year. I wrote a poem called 1968. Probably the next year in 1969 or 1970 in high school, I wrote a poem called 1968 because it just, how could that many things happen in one year? You know, Martin Luther King was assassinated. Robert Kennedy was assassinated. And I had seen Robert Kennedy in my neighborhood when I was a kid. He was campaigning for the Senate. And I was close. I was like 5 feet away from him. So when he was assassinated, it had even more of a visceral effect on me. All the campus unrest. It was a revolutionary campus protest in Paris, in England, in Italy, in Spain, at Stanford, at Columbia. It was like a youth uprising. It was, but not in a, to me, not in a negative way. A youth uprising, you know, about the Vietnam War, especially, that was the really the galvanizing thing was the war in Vietnam, and the My Lai massacre was also in 1968. I mean, just so much happened. Everything that happened was bigger than life. 250,000 young people protested at the Pentagon. I mean, you can't get 100. It's hard to get 100 people to really protest nowadays. They'll do it for the cameras for CNN, but back then, 250,000 people, a quarter of a million people, one protest. I had to know it was a special year.
That's cool. Yeah, certainly. I mean, so many things date back to that time, and I have to confess I was not alive in 1968, but it seems like it must have been a exciting and terrifying time to be alive. I mean, it's such intensity, and it seems like it just didn't let up. I mean, talking to my mom and folks who were there, you know, it was just you're almost afraid to look at the news because every time there was something else happening that just seemed to be tearing the world apart.
But and also the Vietnam War was also something that tore families apart. You know, my dad was a veteran of World War II and a staunch Republican, and we used to have arguments at the dinner table. You know, so it's like I'm the hippie kid. I'm like, you know, as far as he's concerned, I'm like leftist, and I'm totally anti-war, and he was a hawk. So, and that was a lot of that.
You know, one of my favorite tracks from the album is "Gonna Be a Fire," and I was curious. You use some spoken word in the intro, and I was wondering who that was. Can you tell me?
That was Malcolm X.
I wondered if it was.
Yeah, and that's really controversial for me to use that particular piece, but you know,
it works.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I can't help it. I'm that person. I just looked at a review of just this morning of somebody had just reviewed my latest single, A Badge and a Gun, and they said, as usual, Rashid Ali is brutally honest.
There are worse things to be.
And not afraid of controversy. So I was tickled by that because I don't go out of my way to be controversial, but there are times when you do something and you say to yourself, well, you know, this is potentially controversial. In other words, here's Malcolm X talking about the field Negro versus the house Negro. And it is a real discussion and dialogue in the black community that, I mean, it goes back hundreds of years. And what it is that those who were in the house, they felt like they had a part in America, but those who were being worked in the fields day and night, they felt like outsiders. And that still exists in America. It's morphed into something else, but the idea of the haves and the have-nots, if we just take the black community as a monolith, that exists separate from, you know, the greater society, or the dominant society that is America.
Yeah. Well, let's hear Gonna Be a Fire. This is from 1968 Black Power, the new album by Rashid Ali, who's joining us in the studios here on Upfront Soul. Gonna Be a Fire.
There were two kinds of Negroes. There was that old house Negro and the field Negro. And the house Negro always looked out for his master. When the master's house caught a fire, he'd try and put the fire out. But then you had some field Negroes. Had nothing to lose. If the master's house caught a fire, they'd pray for a strong wind to come along.
Wake up!
Gonna be a fire. Gonna let it burn.
1968.
Gonna Be a Fire from 1968 Black Power, the new album by Rashid Ali. And Rashid Ali is gracing our studios here on this episode of Upfront Soul. You know, we talked a little bit about the fact that you play most of the instruments on your album yourself, but is there anyone else on the album with you?
Yes, I don't play the trumpet, so my best friend in the world, Ron Taylor, played on nearly all the material. And then what he didn't play on, Emil Martinez, who's a fantastic trumpet player, play it on, and Emil's like family. In fact, he calls me uncle. Huh. And he played on the new, what's that guy's name? Anderson Paak? Anderson Paak? I think that, yeah, Anderson Paak album and a bunch of other things. He plays a lot on a lot of those neo-soul records and stuff. So
sweet.
A chance for him to play something that's old school but not derivative, he loves, because, you know, I'm a horn player, so I write horn lines that horn players love to play.
Right.
So trumpet players, they complain about my music because it's hard, but they love it after it's done.
That's
so
great.
I don't play trumpet.
Great.
But, you know, the funniest thing about I wanted to add to what we were talking about before about how I record. I think people would be mystified or interested to know that I would put down a track, and then I'll put down another track, one after the other, as if I'm just doing a session blind. In other words, what you hear, if people like my music, what they have to understand is a lot of it is mostly improvised. In other words, you know, I don't toil over parts. I play because I'm a player. And I'm a person who enjoys playing on stage and I love making people dance. And that's how I approach the studio. And, I just thought I should say that, because I think that maybe people think something else when they imagine one guy playing everything.
Right, right. So it's really has more of a live feel if you're just going in there and laying it down. And then obviously you'd have to go back over it afterward, but it sounds much more improvisational than I would have guessed, actually.
Well, yeah, I really change things. If anything, like most musicians, I mean, we might overplay a little bit, but at this stage in my life, I'm pretty much spot on with what I want. In other words, I have a good internal sense for being graceful or for being, you know, not verbose musically.
Yep. Well, definitely, I would say you've really struck a beautiful balance in both the albums so far, and I'm looking forward to the third. But I won't get ahead of myself. I'm still enjoying 1968 Black Power.
Thank you.
And, you know, another song I was curious about is Fly Like a Bird, which to me sounds like it's written from the perspective of someone who's incarcerated but is finding freedom within themselves. Is that anywhere close to what you intended, or
no? That's spot on. Though I found interesting interpretations in what some writers have written about that song. Some people have realized, rightly so, that it's a metaphor, because we can always be imprisoned, you know.
Right.
In a very basic way, it is about incarceration, because this album is about a more introspective look into these currents of what being Black in America has become. And there are many people who are incarcerated, many Black and brown men especially, who are incarcerated. And see, when I first started teaching, my first teaching assignment was teaching incarcerated teens.
Wow.
In the California Youth Authority. And it broke my heart.
Yeah.
It broke my heart, because when you see somebody who should be in an age appropriate setting, already, you know, locked up at age 13, 14, 15, 16, and some already with three strikes against them will be incarcerated for the rest of their lives.
Mm.
If that doesn't affect you, you got a hole in your soul.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's something that I would ponder often, what it must feel like. I played a concert with my old band, Rain People, and we did kind of like a mini California prison tour. And when we played, the crowds, they were practically in tears, and they would tell me, man, you know, like you made me feel like I could fly out of this prison. So it was something I've heard, you know, like something they felt. And of course, Maya Angelou, she says it so perfectly, which is why I have to quote her at the end. You know, I know why the caged bird sings. Yeah. The caged bird sings because the caged bird can't fly.
Well, it's a really powerful song. I've got to tell you, you've given us so many powerful songs. It's just such a pleasure to. I'm a hard sell on new music because it just so much of it does not reach the standard I hold to immortalize an album. But both 1968 Soul Power and now 1968 Black Power just do it all right, lyrically, musically. You've got it all going on. So I would love to play Fly Like a Bird right now. It's from 1968 Black Power by Rashid Ali.
I can fly.
You've got Upfront Soul, and we're here with Rashid Ali. We just heard Fly Like a Bird from 1968 Black Power, his wonderful new album. Now, I'm sorry to say, it seems like people in America have not had the opportunity to fully discover this album yet, but we're doing our best to make that happen here. So, but you know, you are an American artist, but you have a global fan base. So I was wondering if you could talk about how the album is being received overseas.
Oh, very kinetically, very passionately. You know, a couple of years ago, when the indie revolution really kicked in, people said, you know, if you have 1,500 hardcore fans, they can begin to sustain you. And it's some kind of scientific, you know, metric, some metric thing. So, yeah, I have 1,500 rabid new fans in the UK that have really pushed the album, pushing the album across borders. And it's happening gradually, but it's funny how a small group of cult followers can, you know, can really energize people. And every day on social media, when I log on to social media, every day there's somebody friending me and there's somebody telling me that they just heard my album, or they just bought both albums, they're taking pictures, they're sending me pictures of the album, and none of that is happening in America, but it's all happening abroad, and I'm thankful. You know, Duke Ellington was one of my heroes, and he always said he was a citizen of the world. In fact, one of my visceral life moments was going to Duke Ellington's house, and when I walked in with my my friend and partner Thelonious Monk Jr., we walked into the foyer, and we looked on every single inch of every wall, including, check this out, including above your head on the ceiling, was a proclamation or a key to a city. Wow. Around the world. And then we walked in, in the foyer, then we walked into the anteroom, the same thing. And I'm talking about a room with a balcony and then more. Wow. Of the same. Wow. So, and maybe there was more beyond that, but that's where I stopped looking. Yeah. I was amazed because I thought, I was humbled by that because I was thought to believe by my parents, always told me that Duke Ellington was an incredible artist and that he was loved the world over. But I saw the proof.
Huh. Are you telling me you met Duke Ellington?
No.
You were,
he was
just
on the road.
House. Oh, my God. But you were in his house. That's still pretty cool. My grandmother was a great jazz dancer and worked actually in resorts in the Catskills in the kitchens. And the perks of that job were, you know, she would get to sort of sneak in the wings when the big acts would play. And she saw a number of great big bands. But what made her life was seeing Duke Ellington. And she told me that story many times. So, but that's pretty amazing. Well, I'm so glad that you are getting that rabid fan base you so richly deserve in Europe. And I'm wondering, you know, what's next? I know that 1968 Black Power is the second in a trilogy, and I would love to hear what you have in store for us next.
Next is 1968 Love Power, and if 1968 Soul Power was the overview to the what it felt like for kids to take this summer of love in 67 or this hippie idea and try to change the world, right? 1960 Soul Power was about how all kids, no matter what they look like, what color they were, what race or origin they had this kind of world explosion. because that's what happened. 1968, Black Power is a little bit more autobiographical look at what it feels like and what it felt like for me as a teenager to grow up in a housing project in the inner city. And 1968, Love Power goes back to, is a, for me, a beautiful combination of what it's like to try to love within that inner city environment, and then what effect this revolution had on how young people, you know, like we called it the Aquarian Age, or free love, and how that impacted the future, which is the now. And you can see the effects now. I see the effects because I'm old enough to have seen people morph into, you know, all these different ways they love. And I don't particularly, as a songwriter, like to write personal love stories. You know, like some songwriters, they write very, you could tell, it's like they had one person in mind. They wrote this for this one person. And maybe they even name it, you know, like Mandy or whatever. You know, I'm not that guy. I like to write from a universal viewpoint. And so I'm very proud of, I've got songs about love, but it flips the script. Trust me, it's love from a lot of different angles. And I'm very proud of that aspect of this next album.
Well, I'm very excited. I can't wait to hear it. But, you know, again, no rush. We are thoroughly enjoying 1968 Black Power. And the problem is, for me as a DJ, you know, oftentimes I get an album and there's one or two songs on there that I really like, and I spin those and I'm done. And, you know, I move on and I've got new stuff coming in, and that's fine because, you know, but this one I'm like, I've got to go back and back and back because they're... Every track is a winner, and I'm just so enjoying this album.
Oh, thank you. I'm very honored to hear you say that, but quite frankly, that is my intent.
Excellent.
I'm trying to create bingeable music. I'm trying to create, I want somebody to look back and say, this guy made a trilogy, and each album had 18 songs, and I'm still listening.
Yeah, there is no deadwood on there, absolutely no deadwood, and that is very rare to be able to say, and I'm just so excited to hear the next album, so excited to keep listening to what you've already brought us. So thank you so much, Rashid Ali, for being here with us on Upfront Soul, and thank you for making your music, 1968 Black Power. You need to go out and find it and buy it and listen to it until you wear it out.
Oh, thank you. And that is my mantra, and that is my prayer, that people will support indie music. You know, there's no army behind me. This really is just me when I turn around, my shadow.
Well, do you have a song you'd like to go out with? I mean, I could make a request if not, but if there's something in mind that you have to take us out. I'll tell you the song that I just find totally infectious. Do you mind if I choose one?
Which one do you want to play?
I love We Know How to Party.
Oh, okay. We certainly do.
I just think that's a very, I mean, that starts the party with the album, but we might as well end the party here with this interview with We Know How to Party from 1968 Black Power. Thank you so much, Rashid Ali.
Thanks for having me.
It's 1968. Make it funky.
but just don't care. Because we love the party, throw our hands up in the air. With no hard work, more than you'll ever know. Backbreaking kind of work, but we know how to party. We all get together in any kind of weather.
Just heard We Know How to Party by Rashid Ali. So wonderful that Rashid Ali could join us in the studio to talk about his brand new album 1968 Black Power. Now Rashid Ali talked a little bit about being in Duke Ellington's house. So let's hear from Duke Ellington with Kinda Dukeish, Rockin' in Rhythm. Here on Upfront Soul.
Our next selection will be executed in the beginning by our first chair rhythm section. Thank you.
Duke Ellington putting the wraps on it for this episode of Upfront Soul with Kinda Dukish Rockin' in Rhythm from the Great London Concerts. I am Sanguine Fromage. I do thank you for your listening ears, and I hope you'll come back again next week. In the meantime, remember, if you get knocked down, don't stay down. Get up and get down. Upfront Soul comes to you from Community Radio WERU-FM, Blue Hill, Maine.
Keep those records playing, 'cause I'm having such a good time. I'm out here. Everybody hear me say, having a party. Everybody having a party. Everybody's swinging. Everybody's dancing to the music. Dancing to the music. On the radio, baby.
Sounds,
that sounds nice.